Well, to create a new standard, it takes something that's not just a little bit different. It takes something that's really new and really captures people's imagination. And the Macintosh, of all the machines I've ever seen, is the only one that meets that standard.
Hello, and welcome to the Goldcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, when he made his Brexit years ago, 22% of the local pubs had to close their doors forever. Leander Caney is here.
That's right. That's true. The whole British brewing industry collapsed.
Also with us, against the advice of the singing troupe TLC, he spends his time off actually chasing waterfalls. Buster Kine is here.
Hey, man.
That's true. You guys should go look at his Instagram account. Also with us, live from his local library, he came here to dazzle us with more stories from the cult of Mac. David Pierini is here. I don't know why I can't say your first name.
That's okay.
It's a pretty common name. It's one that I've said many times in my life.
Well, I'm not a common man, so...
That's certainly true. David is joining us live from his local library and may soon be ushered out by his librarian for staying in the room too long.
Yeah, something like that.
I wonder how a local librarian would get you out of the room, though, because they usually seem like pretty docile people, you know? Like, what's she going to say? Is she going to come in and try to threaten you, but in her library voice?
I think that the librarians secretly are trained in hand-to-hand combat by the Mossad.
So I like that theory.
I'm not going
to
mess with them.
She comes in and she's like, sir, I'm going to need you to leave right now. And you're like, what? I'm not going anywhere. And she just grabs your arm and twists it behind your back and slams your head down on the table.
Yes.
Ow, lady, please, my arm. And then she gets close to your ear and she's like, sir, I'm going to need you to leave right now.
Sad to run a library.
You're like, damn, they know how to run a library.
So if you hear a commotion, you know what's going down.
Hear yeah. David start howling in pain. We know exactly what happened. Well, welcome to the Cult Cast. You know, if you're new to this show, I would just say, here's what we do. Every week we congregate to talk about the week's best Apple stories. And we get off track quite a lot. So even though this show is supposed to be 30 minutes, it's usually just a hair longer. 35, 40 minutes max. And if you like what you're hearing, you can always subscribe to the show on iTunes. No matter where you're joining us from, iTunes is probably the best place to get the show weekly, to have it delivered right to your iPhone. We can jump right into the news, but before we do that, let me go ahead and say thank you to FreshBooks for supporting this episode. Now is the time to get started with FreshBooks. Here's why. FreshBooks is the online invoicing software for small businesses and entrepreneurs. And if you use it throughout the year, like I do, by the time tax time comes around, you're not going to be stressed out. You're not going to have to waste a bunch of your time. You're not going to have to pay some bookkeeper like $100 an hour to go through all of your receipts and the shoeboxes that you keep to get your business in order. You'll already be ready for tax time. Not only that, but every month you can go into your FreshBooks account, and because you've been diligent and you are keeping track of your expenses and your invoices, you can see exactly where your business is at, because FreshBooks has a plethora of really powerful, easy-to-use reporting features that will show you a ton of information about your business that you probably have never seen before. All of this, and you also get to invoice your clients easily, so they'll pay you faster. You can accept credit cards online, PayPal business payments. You're going to look super professional. You're going to save a ton of time. Check it out yourself. You can get a 30-day free trial to FreshBooks by heading over to FreshBooks.com/cultcast. That's FreshBooks.com/cultcast. Make sure you enter cultcast in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thanks to FreshBooks for supporting this episode. Okay, let's hop into a fun bit of news. Buster.
Fun bit of news, huh?
Did you catch this week? There was some news that we are going to be getting FreshBooks.
FreshBooks, huh?
We're going to be getting Netflix offline viewing by the end of 2016. Did you catch this news, bro?
I did see that news, bro. Oh, and I was like, it's about damn time.
It's about time. And you know, we've talked about this in the past, and Netflix has said that they were never going to do this. Their CEO, Reed Hastings, said this is not a feature they ever planned to implement, which seemed totally crazy because Amazon was building it into their... Yeah, they had just added it into their Amazon Video app, and it's super useful. And when they did that, I thought to myself, man, Amazon's really putting the pressure on Netflix. They've got the entire HBO back catalog, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to let you view things offline. It just kind of seems like a natural fit to allow you to do that. And Netflix is not going to do it. Right. So thank God for competition. There was an interview with COO of this company called Panthera. And their company provides the offline viewing technology for Comcast, Charter Communications, and some other technology companies. And he said it's definitely coming by the end of 2016. So Netflix is working on it. Nice. I think that's going to make it worth the extra money they're charging, because I think they're raising the price on everyone to $10 a month.
Yeah.
Are you a Netflix subscriber?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, I am too. How about you, Leander?
Yeah, yeah.
I think everyone is.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, you are too.
Yeah. Even Divad or whatever you called me at the.
You mean Diavid?
Diavid. Yes.
Diavid.
Yes.
Yeah. Everyone I know is a Netflix subscriber, so this is good news for all of us. Did you guys see the new icon that they updated their app with this week?
I did not.
Good Netflix? No, yeah. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Not good.
Is it a disaster like Instagram?
It's. That's a good comparison. I wouldn't say it's as bad as Instagram's. But I loved their previous logo, and it always humors me when I see companies update something that I feel like really didn't need to be updated, and because they are constantly fiddling with things, they get tired of something that really doesn't need to change, and then they change it. And so Netflix's new icon, I don't feel like is as good as their old one. It's not a complete disaster like Instagram's icon, which I really can't stand, but yeah, it's not great. Okay. I thought this was interesting. I don't know if you guys saw this article about John Gruber talking about third-party watch faces. Buster, did you hear anything about this?
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay, so let me just read this to you guys, and I want to get your take. He said, Apple fancies themselves as a real watch company. He was talking about this on his podcast, by the way. And as a real watch company, everything you're going to see is going to be San Francisco. So the San Francisco font, you know, that Apple implemented recently across iOS and OS X. And then he goes on to say, any analog dial is going to use those Apple-style hands, the capsule-shaped hands, and watch companies typically have things like that that they reuse. For example, the hands on a Rolex are instantly recognizable, and the dials are unmistakably Rolex dials. Apple fancies itself as a high-end watch company. And so John Gruber is basically saying that we're never going to see third-party watch face because Apple wants to keep a consistent look across the watch faces. Buster, what do you think about this?
Lame.
You think he has a good point?
Maybe, but that's still lame. I mean, if Apple's not going to allow third-party watch faces, then they need to invent a whole shit ton more watch faces on their own. I just find that their current options are very lacking.
Yeah, I think Gruber's going by historical precedent in that Apple has really frowned upon, you know, any kind of like UI tweaking.
Yeah.
It doesn't allow themes, and it hasn't, you know, going all the way back to, you know, all the OSs on, I don't know if anyone doesn't remember this, like in Mac OS, like 7 or something.
Oh, there was one, a theme of my, editor. One of my favorites, yeah.
Was it? No, it must have been 8, right? 8 or 9? Mm-hmm. You could do some tweaking on it, but it was like, and this was kind of under Emilio, I think, right? But then Jobs put the kibosh on it straight away. Mm-hmm. So it's gone back a few years. Anyway, you know, it's always been the realm of tweakers and jailbreakers and I don't know, but Buster says, it really would be a shame if they didn't do that because it, you know, I think this is it's not a normal watch, is it? Obviously, and in fact, I think by allowing things like pictures, I mean, I've already got this thing called I forgot what it's called.
You talked about on the show previously. I can't remember what it was called either.
Right, I want to say Riser, but it's not Riser. I can't remember the name of it now. Anyway, you know, you can put photographs from a library, so it's got these space pictures on it, and even though it uses, I guess, their complications, you know, and it's consistent that, you know, that the typeface for the time and whatever is consistent, you know, it's not It doesn't scream Apple Watch face. And it would sure be a waste of that new face gallery that they've just put into the new watch app. Because, I mean, if you look at that, you go, oh, my, it looks just like, you know, a watch face store.
It feels as though Apple's prepping us to receive third-party watch faces. And I don't know a lot about watches. His point makes a lot of sense in that there's a specific kind of brand that is projected via the watch face, and nice watch companies have a look to the hands of their watches and stuff. But I've been looking at analog watches recently, and even across specific brands like Timex or Citizen or whatever, they have watch hands that look different. I don't know. I don't know if I consider an Apple Watch a Rolex quality type timepiece. I don't think it is. I consider it to be more along the lines of Timex or Citizen. So I think that they perhaps will allow third-party watch faces still. It would be a terrible, grotesque shame if they end up only allowing the Apple Watch faces, because as Buster said, they're lacking, seriously lacking.
Well, and it also sort of flies in, kind of a little bit in the face of what the whole thing's supposed to do, which is, you know, it's like the iPhone. It's it's a blank screen that can turn in, it can turn the device into any one of different things, you know, from a fitness tracker to an alarm clock to a weather station.
Yeah, it needs more personalization, you know.
And they allow bands, right, Buster? I mean, you know, you can get all kinds of bands. If they allowed bands, why not watch faces?
Right.
Yeah, what the heck? We need to tell Gruber to shove it. Do you have his email address, Leander?
I think it's Gruber@Gruber.com.
Gruber. That sounds like a great show name for a lawyer show. Gruber and Gruber.
Or there's always McGruber.
McGruber, one of the most terrible movies I've ever seen in my entire life. Have you guys seen that movie?
I love the skits on SNL, though.
Yeah, the skits on SNL. Do you remember McGruber where Will Forte played a fake MacGyver on SNL? No one recalls this.
I do,
come
yeah.
on, guys.
No. That was one of my...
McGruber on SNL was one
that
of the best...
That was his most memorable characters.
Yeah, okay. So he turned into a movie... And I went to see the movie with my cousin, and we were sitting there completely stone-faced, not smiling, anything, and until about halfway through the movie, there's a scene where Val Kilmer comes out with a carrot shoved halfway up his butt and wagging it like a tail.
What?
Exactly.
This is around the time when Val Kilmer started to get fat, right?
Yeah,
because he was eating at both ends. Or?
Yeah, exactly. He's consuming from both ends. Total tangent. I'm not going to take this far at all. But what happened to Val Kilmer? One of the best actors of our time. What happened to that guy? Anyway, now he's doing MacGruber movies. Anyway, so he's wagging this carrot in his rear and shaking it around. And I turn to my cousin, and he turns to me, and we both had a silent moment of realization that this is the worst movie we had ever seen in our entire lives. We didn't have to say anything. It is terrible. But strangely enough, has actually gotten pretty good reviews on IMDb and stuff.
What's it called again?
It's called MacGruber, MacGruber. It's probably one of Gruber's favorite movies because it has his name in it.
Exactly.
Okay. Gruber and Gruber.
Can you imagine what MacGruber could do with an Apple Watch and a paperclip?
Yeah. I mean, he could start your car and then make it explode. Or defuse the bomb that you have installed on your chest in that vest. No problem. Yeah, so I still have hope. I still have hope Apple's going to do the right thing here. I think that John Gruber's logic, you know, it makes sense. But it kind of depends on how Apple sees themselves and whether or not they go the Rolex route or the Citizen route. I don't think they're a Rolex-type watch, but my personal opinion. Did you guys see that... that photo of the iPhone 7 lightning cable this week, or the iPhone 7 ear pods with the lightning.
Dubious photo.
Yeah, you think so?
Well, just
looks totally
like a
fake,
piece
didn't
of,
it?
Yeah, it looked like it was soldered on together by some kid in Japan or Taiwan, wherever it came from.
Yeah, it it didn't look convincing at first, but once, because there's two photos, there's one with the circuit board exposed. So the circuit board connects to, there's like a small tiny circuit board that connects where the 3.5 millimeter audio jack is now, and then it has a lightning connector there that you would presumably plug into your iPhone or whatever. And then there's one where the circuit board is not exposed and has like a smooth white plastic cover over it. And that one actually looked convincing, I thought, because that didn't look hacked together.
Well,
and I was
like
thinking, if you don't think so?
Well, compare it to the way the lightning cables look, and that's definitely not the type of connector Apple uses there. I mean, unless they have to add something for audio.
Well, they definitely have to add something for the audio conversion.
Okay.
So that's why, if you guys look in the show notes, I'll put the picture in there. The tip that plugs into the iPhone is longer than you would normally see on headphones. And that's because, yeah, they have to do a digital to analog conversion so that the ear pods will work.
Well, see, if it was fake, the faker wouldn't know that, would they? And they would have used a regular lightning connector.
Yeah, you're
right?
Probably right. Yeah, unless they were just super creative.
Yeah, but the fact that it looks so different, if it was fake, I mean, it would be too, someone would have to be really knowledgeable to do it that well. Right? If they were going to fake it, they would just use a regular lightning connector, and people would go, "Oh, wow, it looks just like a regular lightning connector."
That's true. That's actually a great point. Yeah. Right. So the pictures, I think, looked somewhat authentic to me, and I was actually impressed. I thought, in my mind, I had always envisioned Apple's going to sell us a normal pair of EarPods, and they're going to give us this piece of crap dongle that we're going to have to keep on us at all times. But if they include the actual circuitry in the EarPods themselves, that makes it so much more convenient, and it looked super slick, an easy way to, transition from a normal, audio jack to the lightning version. But I am also curious, it seems kind of weird to put such an expensive piece of electronics into a crappy pair of earpods, mm-hmm. because earpods, you can get them on Amazon for
like $10,
$7.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, like even
the
less
Apple.
Sometimes.
Well, the Apple ones are the quality is pretty good though, isn't it?
Of the EarPods?
The Apple ones, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking about the Apple ones. I bought a pair of Apple EarPods on Amazon for $8 the other day.
Okay. Are you sure they were Apple ones?
Well, I'm not 100% sure, but they came in the Apple EarPods case. They looked exactly like Apple EarPods. So, and the listing said they were Apple OEM EarPods. So I'm assuming that they're real. It just seems strange to put an expensive piece of technology into a pair of EarPods like that, because people wash their EarPods. They lose their ear pods all the time, and I'm guessing if that new chip is going to be installed at the plug end of the ear pod, they're going to be significantly more expensive than they are now, because now they're not just a piece of crappy, that's the wrong word. They're not a pair of cheap headphones anymore, earphones. Now they're a piece of technology that actually has a cost associated with it. But in any case, I thought it was a great execution of it. Am I alone on that? Leander, did you see the picture?
Yeah, I did. I did see the picture. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. And it looks, I'd say the fact that they didn't use a regular connector really sort of attests to its authenticity. But, the thing is that you won't be, you can't use any other headphones. Because if it had an adapter, then you could use all the headphones you have.
Right.
Right? Wired headphones or wired earbuds.
Yeah.
Right. So now you're limited to this or Bluetooth.
Yeah, and Apple will probably push their Beats Bluetooth headphones once they make the switch. I feel like they're still going to include an adapter. They're going to have to include an adapter. There has to be a stopgap.
So you think there'll be an adapter as well?
Well, we read that rumor a while back that said there would probably be an adapter included, and I think that they will probably... I think they need to include it, because otherwise it's a pretty big negative for the phone, isn't it? They're going to sell you a phone...
Well, you can probably buy it. They probably sell it separately for $125.
They might do that too. Yeah, you're right. They might just not include it and say, "Hey, it's only $25, $30."
It's a dongle,
for a dongle, yet another dongle that you'll need to buy. They're like, "Do you really want to use your nice earphones that you have?" Because I have some nice earphones. I've still been using those Sony ones that I can't recall the name of at the moment. I reviewed them on the show months ago.
I bought a pair of those. Awesome. And I lost them. Yeah, I used them once.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks. How did you like them for the 2 minutes that you owned them?
From what I can remember, they were nice. Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to.
They didn't have a microphone, though, right? So that's a bit of a downer.
Yeah, it is. And they don't have inline volume controls, which I feel like should be included on all headphones now. But yeah, they were the best earphones I think I've ever used. Well, under, you know, $200 for sure. I'll put the name of them in the show notes. People are probably wondering what they are. I'll put that in so that you guys can check them out yourselves. Let's talk about this totally crazy story about this guy suing Apple
for his doodles.
So we don't normally talk about stories like this, but this one is so batshit crazy that I had to include it this week because it's totally nuts. There's this guy in Florida who is suing Apple for $10 billion and 1.5% of all Apple's future earnings because he claims that he is the one that came up with the original idea for the iPhone all the way back in 1992. And I think my favorite part of this story is that he created this sketch, and there's a picture of the sketch in this story that you should check out. He created this sketch in 1992. It's 2016, okay? So how many years later is that? Is it 24 years later? And I imagine this guy, he's emerged from his household. He must be a guy who doesn't leave his house much. And he sees some guy on an iPhone, and he has an epiphany. He's like, oh my gosh. And he runs over to this guy, this complete stranger, and he rips the iPhone out of his hand, and he looks at it baffled and puzzled, eyes wide, and he's like, where did you get this? Right? For the first time ever, he's realized that somebody has copied his design that he's made 24 years prior, and he is shocked by this information. He just doesn't know what to do with himself. So here he is filing a lawsuit. This guy's name is Thomas S. Ross. And he filed a patent with this crazy sketch that I described for an electronic reading device, a device so designed and aggregated as to have created a novel combination of media and communication tools. Does this not just illustrate perfectly how screwed up our patent system is? That this guy can just draw a sketch of a futuristic device that doesn't even exist. It shows a usage of mixed media. He doesn't do anything with it. And then 24 years later, he's suing Apple for $10 billion.
Did he file it with the patent office in 92?
Yes, he filed it with the patent office in 1992. But, you know, I mean, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get a napkin. I'm going to draw a picture of a vehicle that's flying. It's a flying personal vehicle. And the vehicle has a mixture of leisure and business uses. And then I'm just going to file that with the patent office. And then if anyone ever creates a flying car in 30 years, I'm going to sue them. I mean, that's kind of analogous to what's happening here. It's totally, totally crazy. And one of the best parts of the suit, Thomas Ross has suffered as a result of seeing his iPhone everywhere. Remember, he just emerged from his house just to realize these things are everywhere now. Without the proper credit for inventing the device being bestowed upon him, it has caused him great and irreparable injury and cannot be fully compensated or measured in money. He's not going to be better by getting money from Apple, but in the meantime, he's happy to take $10 billion. It's a start. Yeah. It's a start. He wants an apology, but he also wants $10 billion and 1.5% of Apple's future earnings.
Look at the drawings that they filed.
Right?
With the,
look at that freaking drawing.
So it's like a little kid did them.
Yes. Right, it's like his son did it and handed it to him and he put it on the fridge.
And it doesn't even look like an iPhone either.
It looks
like
an iPhone.
It's got a keyboard and all these buttons and a pull-out cellular antenna.
It looks like if you took a BlackBerry with keys on it, or you took two of them and you taped them together at the hinge so that you could open it. That's what it looks like to me.
Well, right. Yeah, the folding one has a whole bunch of features, including a... it has a parallel printer port.
There you go.
Do you remember how big they were?
They were huge.
It's like half the size of the phone.
Yeah, but they're also, like 2 inches across.
It has a built-in fax, a built-in modem. It runs MS-DOS 5.
Well, the sad part is this guy can go to Apple and probably get them to settle with him.
Well, I doubt it, right? Because he's going to have some serious legal muscle to defend this patent, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, doesn't the patent office, they don't accept everything. You couldn't literally draw on a napkin and file a patent for something you dream up. It has to have some kind of merit, doesn't it? I mean, I don't know how low the bar is.
You would think so. I'm not a patent expert. You would think it would have to have some type of specific use case or functionality or merit, as you said. But look at that guy's drawing. I mean, look at it. It's like he just scribbled it out, and it's like, it does this, it does this, it does X, Y, Z, and
it's got every single thing on it.
Yeah,
you can imagine.
Every feature that this guy can imagine.
It looks like Futurama, right? Like a joke one.
It looks like the Homer car. If Homer had invented the iPhone, that's what it would look like. Right. And now, 24 years later, he's coming to Apple and sticking out his hand and, you know, slamming his index finger into his palm and demanding that they pay him. If I were Steve Jobs, if I were Tim Cook, I don't know how this wouldn't just drive you crazy. Because I find suits like this to be so frivolous and absurd, patently absurd, that it would just drive me crazy that you were having to settle these kinds of cases. I wonder if it's cheaper for Apple to just pay this guy, hey, look, here's $1 million, just go away.
Well, I doubt that because, they probably, you know, there's nothing in here about his legal team, right?
No.
I mean, I can't imagine he has some of the...
His legal team is probably a sock puppet that he constructed in his own garage.
It's probably him. He's probably conducting his own...
And there's probably no lawyer that'll even take his case.
I don't know. There's some pretty greedy slip and fall lawyers out there.
If there is a lawyer taking the case, then... You know, they probably are going to get, you know, they probably will be reaching for a settlement, obviously, right?
Yeah,
that's why they inflated these things. And then if a lawyer has taken the case, there's probably a good chance he would get something, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, companies settle this kind of crap all the time because it's cheaper for them to settle than it is for them to litigate.
To fight it, right.
Yeah. So this guy might walk away with $500,000, $1 million. You know, the more we talk about this, the more I'm thinking, man, we're in the wrong business.
I have a great idea. What is this guy's name again?
Thomas Ross.
So why doesn't Apple then issue a limited edition Thomas Ross iPhone with Thomas's signature? Maybe, you know, 5 or 10 to make it a collector's item.
Uh-huh.
Then I think he'll be satisfied. He'll get the credit he deserves.
That would actually probably sell really well if Johnny Ive created like a custom... Actually, this isn't Johnny Ive. This isn't a Johnny Ive product. They should probably relegate this to some other employee at the app or at Apple who isn't so prestigious. Maybe the janitor, maybe the arborist, and then we'll let them create a phone that looks similar to the one that he drew on this napkin, and then sell that. I think that's a great way to sell this case.
I like it.
Well, you know, this is nothing. This is what Nathan Myhrvold does, isn't it? You know, with his the name of his patent troll company?
I don't remember, but I know what you're talking about.
He was the chief scientist at Microsoft, and then he went and did this. They were buying up patents from everywhere, mm-hmm. and they're spending millions and millions of dollars of patents. And as far as I know, they've been very, very successful. I mean, they've managed to extort.
Wow.
And I use that word, you know, quite consciously, extort millions and millions of dollars. But of course, they have a big, you know, they're very serious when they go to court. They're going to fight it to the end, and they have the resources to do it.
Are they litigating legitimate patents, though? Because this is clearly frivolous.
It's all very, very arguable, you know. I mean, a lot of companies, you know, Apple, you know, we cover Apple patents every week. They're filing several hundred patents a week mm-hmm. these days. Mm-hmm. And every sort of half-baked idea that anyone has, you know, they get the patent lawyers to write it up and they file it. And it's really like a legal defense thing. You know, it's like, at least for a company Apple size, you know, they have all these patents on file. And then if Samsung comes out with a phone that does, I don't know, you know, makes a cappuccino, then Apple can say, well, you know, sue him probably. You know, and it's funny because they don't often sue the right people about the right things, I don't think. You know, the Apple Samsung trial, you know, revolved around four or five fairly distinctive features, but probably not the most distinctive features of the iPhone. And it's clear that Android obviously did rip off, you know, the whole concept and a lot of the details.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But these are all just legal strategies, you know. I mean, it's like, it's the kind of stuff you can defend in court. You've got to have some paperwork. The court wants to see documentation.
Hmm.
And, you know, and patents are a good way to do that. This is why companies, as far as I know, Apple won't even, if someone tries to approach the company, like all these DIY inventors, they're like the worst kind of nightmare for a big company. They do not want to hear, like that story of the guy that invented the windscreen wipers, you know, that General Motors ripped off, in his garage. It's like, they just want to hear this kind of stuff because it can turn into a legal nightmare that will drag on for decades and decades. You know, ideas are two a penny. It's about implementation.
Exactly. I was just about to say that. Ideas aren't worth anything because let's say you dream up a spacecraft that floats without using propellers or rockets and you're like, oh man, I can't believe I had this great idea. This is such a better way to do it. It will float without using fuel, right? Oh man, what a good idea. But getting from an idea to an actual viable, commercially available product is an entirely different universe. You have to spend so much money to figure out how all those things are going to work, how they're going to function, how you're going to sell them. And so that's what actually, in my opinion, has the value, because you've actually gone and figured out how to create a product instead of just dreaming something up. A lot of people can dream stuff up. I mean, how many uncles have come to you and told you about their great idea that they never chased, right? Everyone has good ideas, but right. It's implementing those ideas that really has value, I think. So it's crazy that this guy could be like, this was my idea back in 1992. Who cares, dude? You did nothing with it for 24 years. Where have you been? Why did you not come out when, you know, the original iPhone was released? And what was that? That was 9 years ago. It's like, where right. were you 9 years ago?
I know, madness.
I was in my bunker. I wasn't sure if Y2K had happened or not. And so I finally ran out of food. I had to emerge from my bunker. And I was like, what are you talking on? What is that device? Okay. I'm getting myself all heated up.
Bit of a rant there, yeah. You better take a deep breath.
Yeah,
sorry. Take a couple deep breaths. It's like we were talking about AT&T or Comcast or something. I'm going to have to get my blood pressure down a little bit.
Don't forget your pills. Take your pills.
Yeah, I'm going to take a couple pills. David, why don't you regale us with another story from the cult of Mac? This is going to set my heart at ease. You're going to entertain us with another crazy story. What do you have for us this week?
Well, I would love to set your heart at ease, and I hope I will do so with this story.
This week
I've been looking at iPhone photography because, you know, not only did the iPhone change the phone forever, but it also changed photography forever. So I've been profiling different photographers, and the one story that really was interesting to me was actually a sports shooter who uses his iPhone. A guy by the name of Bran Mangin. He's in the Bay Area, and he is a guy whose pictures have been on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Whose pictures are double trucks in Sports Illustrated. He shoots for Major League Baseball. He has shot every World Series since 2000, but he is now being hired to shoot with his iPhone. what's kind of interesting about this is that some professional sports organizations like the PGA Tour and NASCAR have recognized, finally have recognized the Instagram aesthetic and the aggressive use of social media to keep their brand relevant. And so the PGA Tour will hire like a dozen photographers to cover the event, and they'll all bring their expensive gear and walk 18 holes a day for 4 days straight, and in walks Brad with just his iPhone. And, you know, in a lot of ways, he's taking the kinds of pictures that those guys can't take. He's kind of telling the story of each tournament in a way that none of the other photographers even have time to. He's going behind the scenes, shooting in the players' lounge, photographing the guys cutting the greens at sunrise. And these pictures have proven to be very popular with the PGA Tour's social media audience. And he keeps getting hired to work some of these tournaments. And what's nice about this is photography is changing rapidly, as you know, and it's getting really difficult to make a living as a working photographer. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the freelance fees have sort of dried up. And Brad is getting hired to work with his iPhone.
Now, wait a second. So he's doing primarily social media photography. Is that right?
Yeah.
I just want to clarify. Sure. I'm like, these aren't going into like Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, but he did a big feature in Sports Illustrated, didn't he?
He did. It was kind of funny. He was one of the last photographers to get an iPhone. He was still carrying a flip phone around. And he finally, late 2011, got his first iPhone and loved it. Took it to spring training with him in 2012. And later that summer, Sports Illustrated ran three double trucks of his Instagram photos. And that turned out to be so popular, a book was published of his Instagram photos. Mm-hmm. And so he's become very well known for, you know, kind of this offbeat, you know, take on sports that he just happens to get with his iPhone while he's at the stadium shooting a game.
And so he's posting these pictures primarily to their Instagram accounts, and I'm assuming there's some type of narrative that he includes.
Yeah, so he, he has his own Instagram account, and I think that's kind of how he got the following, because he was just, you know, he was able to go into the dugouts and, photograph the things that we don't normally see at a ball game or even mm-hmm. in the sports pages.
And you can't tell that they're done with iPhones, can you? I mean, they look beautiful. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at his early stuff, that was with like the iPhone 4. It looks a little rougher than, say, the stuff he's shooting right now with the iPhone 6S. But yeah, the stuff it's beautiful, and he works very well with the limitations of the iPhone. Obviously, he's not shooting tight, you know, peak action. He's kind of shooting around the edges and telling a different story.
Yeah, behind the scenes kind of stuff, right?
I love that. Yeah. I love this story. I really do.
I do too. And that's not to say that anybody with an iPhone can go to a PGA tournament and cover it the way he does, because obviously he is, you know, a very experienced, trained storyteller. And, you know, he knows how to kind of win people's trust, and he's very charming, but he also can recognize when a good moment is about to happen and when mm-hmm. to take that picture.
As you said, he's not doing the action shots of the guy sliding into home base, because obviously the iPhone would be terrible for that. And you need expensive photographic equipment to take pictures like that.
You sure do. And, you know, we talked about it. I said, well, you know, what other sports would you like to conquer with this? And really it becomes about access. Mm-hmm. You know, he says like he can't really see doing this type of work with football without having access to that sideline or that locker room. You know, it worked really well because with the PGA Tour, he was working for the PGA Tour, so he had unique access. And I think the same thing with NASCAR. He's going to be doing a NASCAR event very soon, and he's going to be in the pit and, the trailers of the drivers. And then he's also shooting, you know, images of the other people that make the race work.
Unreal that this guy can get a career, a job, taking these types of photos, maintaining these social media presences. But in today's day and age, it's such a viable career path. Companies need people, especially someone who can tell a story and take pictures to maintain their social media presences, because they need to have, you know, personable people running their accounts. So how cool is it that this guy can just run around with his iPhone and get great access? Mm-hmm. And I liked how you described it. He's on the fringe telling the stories that you probably wouldn't be covered on CNN or CNN on ESPN. You can tell how much I sports.
You do sports a lot.
Yeah, I sports all the time, and so I'm surprised I got that wrong. And so how cool is it that he gets to go around and tell these sports stories and earn a living doing it? I mean, Is he getting paid okay, David? I mean, is it a viable job? I mean, could people do this and actually, you know, support a family and live?
Well, you know, I don't know about that because, you know, it's really still early as far as, you know, people using the iPhone to make their living or to use it as just one of the tools that they use to make their living. You know, as far as Brad goes, the PGA Tour gigs have helped him pay his mortgage.
Wow.
They fly him to Florida, they flew him to Philadelphia, and he gets to walk around and shoot whatever he wants. He's not assigned to, okay, make sure you get a picture of this sponsor, or, you know, we need a nice shot of this golfer. He can just do whatever he wants. And, you know, while the other photographers are taking the pictures of the champion raising the trophy, he gets a quick capture and then messages it to the social media team and it gets posted right away. So jeez. In the case of these tournaments, the first picture of the winner that you see, if you're not watching it on television, is probably his. Yeah. So it's a really, you know, one of my favorite pictures of his is he was at a seniors event in Philadelphia. And he had this picture of one of the golfers after his round with his shoes and socks off. Mm-hmm. And he had his feet propped up. And you really, and then there was nice light and the colors were nice. But you really got a sense for, you know, this guy just was on his feet for 4 hours, you know, walking 18 holes of golf, and here he is putting his feet up. And that's something you never see. So,
definitely not yeah. in the mainstream coverage anyway. What's this guy's Instagram account?
At Brad Mangin.
How do you spell that? Mangin?
Mangin, M-A-N-G-I-N.
And yeah. I'll put that in the show notes. If you like this story and you didn't know, Leander and David are compiling these great stories for the second edition of The Cult of Mac. All these stories from the world of Apple. People who are fanatical about Apple products, people who make their living via their Apple devices, and they're forming into a compendium that will be available for purchase eventually. Any updates on the sale date on that, guys? Yeah, I didn't think so.
We're still working on it, but eventually
it will be for sale. At some point, right. You guys have to just decide to stop, yeah. Right? And just be like, this is it. And so we're pulling out these stories. You guys are getting them on the live feed. These are as David is doing these interviews. And so you're hearing about these stories before the book even comes out. But it's going to be a cool book when it finally does come out. All these stories will be in one place. And I'm sure you guys will have photography and stuff all in this one great book. So stay tuned for that. And David will be back to share more stories from the Cult of Mac on future episodes. But I think we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come say hi to us on Twitter, we would love to hear from you. Leander is L. Caney. Buster's BST3R. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. And make sure you're following at Cult of Mac for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos in the world of Apple. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. David, can you get it right this time?
Next time.
Yeah! You didn't even get kicked out by the librarian.
Not yet. 13 minutes over, and she hasn't even looked.
She hasn't even come yet. Yeah. I'll be honest. I was kind of hoping she was going to come in there and get you in that slam pose.
Great podcast material. That's for sure.
Yep. Okay, recording.
Okay. I don't get to use that Leanne Dieter gold.
Right. Oh, man. It's like lost into the mists of time, like tears in the rain.
It's such a bummer when that happens.
We'll have to recreate it because it won't have the same.
Okay, let's try to redo
the same
it.
Same magic.
Let's try to redo it. Let's see how good of actors we are. Oh, my gosh. Look, it's Leanne Dieter.
Yeah, I have to learn German.
Oh my gosh. What happened? Did you wake up with a German accent? It doesn't sound like you.
Back to my German roots. I found out Caney is actually not, I thought it was Irish, but it's actually German.
You're kidding?
Oh, really?
No.
Huh.
You should legally change your name to Leanne Dieter.
Leanne Dieter.
Hello, it's me, Leanne Dieter. I'm here to do the cult cast.
Yeah, jawohl.